I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Everybody, and welcome back to Care Talk. We're here to talk about healthcare in America and answer your healthcare and health insurance questions. My name is Laura Packard, and healthcare is personal for me because I'm a cancer survivor and the Affordable Care Act saved my life. So we'll be talking more about policy and how policy affects you, as well as giving you the answers you need to navigate the American healthcare system. And a lot happened in this past week, which is going to affect our healthcare for many years to come. And so we're going to have a series of guests talking about that every week so that you're prepared and you know what's going on or what could happen next year and how it'll affect you and your family. And our first guest this week is Alex Lawson, the executive director at Social Security Works, and he'll be talking about the Inflation Reduction Act and what it includes, how it affects you now, and what could happen next year and beyond. So welcome, Alex.
Thanks, Laura. Great to be here.
Thanks. So first of all, just a refresher for people that may not be aware of all the pieces that are in the Inflation Reduction Act. How does it affect prescription drug costs now for people on Medicare or not on Medicare?
So just looking at the health pieces of the Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA, there's a lot in there. So I think we're going to zoom in on a few of the big ones, but there's generally two buckets that you can think of. There's, I'm going to expand that to three, but there's drug price negotiation. So that is Medicare's ability to negotiate the actual price of drugs down. And that is going to be for people in Medicare. Almost all of the effects in the Inflation Reduction Act and the IRA are within Medicare. And that was the Senate parliamentarian. We're not going to go through all of the fight of how we got to the IRA, but we wanted everything to be for everybody in the country, drug prices for everybody to go down. But what we were able to get was negotiation on some drugs within Medicare. So that's drug price negotiation. There's also a thing called the inflationary rebate. And what that does is makes it much harder for companies to raise the prices of drugs faster than the rate of inflation, which historically the rates of drug price increases have been, 13% just year over year. They have nothing to do with underlying costs of inputs or anything, just pharma greed. So those two are actually together talking about drug prices themselves. Then there is another section of the IRA, which deals with the prices that people themselves pay. These are out-of-pocket costs. And next year, so Trump takes office with a Republican trifecta at the same time that a $2,000 out-of-pocket cap for everybody on Medicare is implemented. What that means is, no matter how much your drugs cost, there's a $2,000 out-of-pocket cap. So it lowers some people's, but also takes away the fear that people have that they might, get cancer, MS, other very costly conditions, and then be facing drug price bills that they can't afford. That's also where the $35 insulin, that's an out-of-pocket $35. It didn't actually lower the price. It's just making the maximum that people in Medicare could pay is $35. Free vaccines is another one. And then, Laura, I'd love to sort of toss it back to you with this, because the truth is every single one of those things is at risk, either in total or in part. And so the plan by the Trump trifecta, the Republicans in Congress with President Trump in the White House, is to actually go at each of these things in turn. That being said, it is not one of the main issues that Donald Trump laid out. He did not lay out himself that he wants to get rid of the lower drug prices, Medicare negotiation. But we know from what Republicans do on the Hill that that is their overarching goal. And we know that for pharma, their singular goal is eliminating Medicare drug price negotiation. It includes also the inflationary rebate, but the stuff that actually lowers prices, that's what they hate the most.
Thanks, Alex. And so, what we know, first of all, we know things that Trump said while he was campaigning, but we also know Project 2025, which the Heritage Foundation released with the help of many Trump former appointees, and already some people who wrote Project 2025 have been named as going into the Trump administration. So Project 2025 has said much, much more about what they want to do about the Inflation Reduction Act than Trump himself has said. What has a Project 2025 said about drug prices?
Project 2025 is really explicit. Just get rid of the entirety of the Inflation Reduction Act. The goal would be to just get rid of it. The issue is for them, and so the risk is all the way to they could get rid of the Inflation Reduction Act. They could overturn, they could pass new legislation. But their majorities are tiny. We don't even know what it will be in the House, but it'll be very slim. They have a 3-person majority, maybe 4 in the Senate. So legislation is going to still be hard for them to pass. But a lot of the dangers in what Project 2025 really lays out is an assault plan using executive powers to both destroy and undermine the IRA and the work on lowering prescription drug prices. That can take a lot of different paths. What Project 2025 says is they're going to come into town on day one, they're going to fire 55,000 civil servants, and they're going to replace them with Trump loyalists who've been taking courses with the Heritage Foundation in the woods specifically for this role. And you can Google it. The actual trainings were leaked and they're accessible online. So you can actually watch what one of these trainings does. And the only criteria that you need to get these placements is an undying loyalty and fealty to Donald Trump. Whatever he says goes. So we're going to have to be fighting against all of these attacks on all fronts. I think one of the ones that I am most worried about when it comes to drug prices is that the administration will just stop defending the IRA in court. The pharmaceutical corporations have sued. There's multiple lawsuits. They've lost every single one of them because it is clearly constitutional to have a law that set. There's no constitutional right for a corporation to be able to make as much money as they want. And the courts have consistently come down on that. But if the Trump administration just stops defending the law and pushes it up to the Supreme Court, there's a danger of the entire thing being invalidated in the court. So we're going to have a legal strategy, congressional strategy, and a strategy on the Trump White House itself. The good news, Laura, is that literally nobody voted to raise their own drug prices, right? That's why you had to go on to Project 2025 to find out what their game plan was. Because when Republicans run, they don't say, hey, I'm going to get raise your drug prices. So we have to use that to our advantage, that lower drug prices is wildly popular. And raising people's drug prices is decidedly unpopular. And that plus the fact that the healthcare stuff that we are talking about is not actually at the top of the priorities that Trump has laid out for his White House. There's definitely, you know, you have United Health, you have the pharmaceutical manufacturers, enormous money focused on this. So I'm not trying to minimize the threat. But what's pretty clear from the reporting is a mass deportation on day one and tax handouts to billionaires with the tax plan, with the tax handouts from his first administration coming up again in the beginning of next year. Those are going to be the top priorities. And so I do think that we have some time to get the American people to understand that they need to raise their voices. We all need to raise our voices together and say, no, you're not going to raise our drug prices. You're going to continue to implement the Inflation Reduction Act. You're going to continue to negotiate lower drug prices. And I don't want to be Pollyanna-ish about this, but Donald Trump himself has had heterodox views from, I don't know what you want to call them, the Gingrich Republicans on drug prices. He has said that he does not like high drug prices. He does not like Americans paying the highest drug prices in the world. And so there is the possibility of using that to protect the gains that we've had. And I'll finish with this one. What I think is going to be most dangerous is that the Republicans are going to come at the issue and they're going to hold things up like pharmacy benefit manager reforms, PBM reforms, which should happen. But they're going to hold those up as a replacement for Medicare drug price negotiation. And we have to ensure that people are educated enough to know that you can't replace one with the other. You have to do both at the same time. If you're not disallowing the manufacturers from ripping us off, then the manufacturers will continue to rip us off as much as they can.
Exactly. And do you have any thoughts for people that are watching right now or listening, and they are rightfully concerned that their drug prices could be going up next year, that people and policies will affect lower drug prices? What should people be doing, if anything, right now? And what can or should they be doing next year to make sure that we work on lowering drug prices instead of taking away the Inflation Reduction Act?
I think the answer is always going to be the same. So number one, get organized, and number two, get loud. The way we beat pharma in the first place was by being organized and loud. So we just have to do that again and more. So you can go to socialsecurityworks.org, for example. You can plug in with us. We're focused on this. This is, you know, I moved to Washington, D.C., to take on pharma, and we delivered them a giant loss, maybe the biggest loss they've ever faced with the Medicare drug price negotiation. We're not giving up one inch. We will be fighting millimeter by millimeter to protect our gains and to even push for some more. So contacting your members of Congress is going to be a key, just letting them know early and often that this is an issue. Nobody voted for higher drug prices and people aren't going to stand for it. And this, in, especially if you live in a red district or a red state, contact your members of Congress, contact your senators and say, you know, absolutely do not raise my drug prices. And I'll maybe end here, Laura, that the really important thing, the most important thing is that more people can afford their drugs, right? That's what we are doing this for. And we have to keep the goal in mind. But strategically, one of the most important things about this fight is that when you lower drug prices, it not only saves people money, it saves the federal government enormous amounts of money. This is money that is spent on other things. And the way budgeting works in Washington, D.C., if they are to allow, if they were to destroy the IRA and drug prices were to go up with the IRA, it will cost them money. So not like Republicans care about the deficit, but that is an even harder pill to swallow, right? That is saying my drug prices are going to go up, plus I'm supposed to pay for it with my tax dollars. So we're going to just have to really clarify the situation. Most of what I think happened during the election is that a lot of people voted for things based on what they thought they understood from television ads. And a lot of those ads were misleading or just straightforward lies. And so when people are faced with the reality of what the Republicans are trying to do while governing, that's where I think we're going to be able to really find a large amount of power in a backlash from the public saying, wait a minute, I didn't vote for my drug prices to go up. I wanted my egg prices to go down. And I think that that is where we're going to find some power. So get organized and get loud is what people can do.
Thank you so much, Alex.
Thanks.
And now we're going to get to some viewer questions from past episodes. And also, please do contact us with your healthcare and health insurance questions for future episodes. You can call or text in your questions at 202-838-6837, and we'll answer them in future episodes. And now it's my pleasure to bring back Diane Archer from Just Care and Social Security Works. Welcome back, Diane.
Oh, pleasure to be back with you, Laura.
The first question is about open enrollment for Medicare, which is going on right now. So what is it? How long does it last? Who needs to take action? And what do you need to do?
Lots of things to think about. Okay, we have between October 15th and December 7th to change your Medicare plan. And that is for everybody with Medicare. And it's really important, no matter whether you're in traditional Medicare or you're in a Medicare Advantage plan, to take a look at what's happening. The good news is that if you're in traditional Medicare, the only change you really have to look at is your Part D prescription drug coverage. And that is likely to have gone up quite a bit for next year. So you wanna see whether there's another option available to you that is lower cost than what you currently have today. And ensure, of course, that it covers the drugs that you need covered. But it's really important if you're in traditional Medicare to check your Part D coverage and switch to a lower cost plan if there is one available, because your coverage may have gone up tenfold even, I've heard, depending upon where you live and what the coverage you have is now. If you're in a Medicare Advantage plan, there's even more to think about. First, you should think about switching to traditional Medicare. And unfortunately, traditional Medicare has become primarily a luxury for the wealthy, because in order to have traditional Medicare, you also need supplemental coverage to protect yourself. Traditional Medicare doesn't have an out-of-pocket limit, which means that you have no protection if your healthcare costs are high. You'll be paying the 20% coinsurance in traditional Medicare to an unlimited degree if you have cancer or heart disease or some other costly condition. So you're going to need supplemental coverage. If you, though, have a low income, if you have Medicaid, or if you qualify for what's called a Medicare savings program, it can pick up some of your Medicare costs, making supplemental coverage more affordable. Or even with Medicaid, you don't even need supplemental coverage. So you want to look into those programs if your income is up to around 175% of the federal poverty level, depending upon where you live, because that can help a lot. And you can do that by reaching out to your state Medicaid office. So if you can afford traditional Medicare and you can get supplemental coverage, that is going to always be your best option in terms of having easy access to the care you need when you need it from the doctors and hospitals you want to use anywhere in the country. There, it is just the best coverage. It is coverage that will meet anyone's needs anywhere in the country at any time. The alternative, which many people see as a much more, a much less expensive alternative, is Medicare Advantage. And these are insurance plans that are run by insurance companies like United Healthcare and Aetna, CVS, Humana are the big ones. And what they do is that they contract with the government to offer you Medicare benefits. The problem here for many people is that their definition of Medicare benefits tends to be a lot narrower than the government's definition in the traditional Medicare program. And sometimes that's also called the original Medicare program. So if you're in a Medicare Advantage plan and you get sick, there is a high likelihood that you're going to have to go through prior authorization protocols in order to get the care that you need, that you're going to have your care delayed waiting, and that sometimes you're going to have your care denied. In addition, there's a high likelihood that you won't be able to use the specialists or the hospitals that you want to use or need to use to treat a condition that is costly and complex. So even just today, the Wall Street Journal reported how a lot of people, a disproportionate number of people in Medicare Advantage, when they get sick, leave for traditional Medicare if they can. And those are the people either with Medicaid, so they have their supplemental coverage already in traditional Medicare, and the people who are wealthy enough and able to get supplemental coverage in their state. And that can be hard to do once you're sick, depending upon the state you live in. But lots of people also in Medicare Advantage end up having to stay when they need rehabilitation services because they're an amputee. And then they find that they can't get them because for reasons that are inexplicable, the insurer says that they're not entitled, that it's not medically necessary for them to have rehab services or nursing services or cancer care, or you name it. If it's costly, you're going to go through a lot of hoops and you may face denials. How do you protect yourself in Medicare Advantage and choose a plan that's right for you? I can tell you, I've been doing this day in and day out for more than 30 years. Yeah, it dates me. But I can tell you that I couldn't tell you how to choose a plan that guarantees you the care you need when you need it in the Medicare Advantage program. The ones that are 1, 2, and 3 star avoid at all costs. The ones that are 4 and 5 star will still not necessarily give you what you need. It's not like signing up with the Four Seasons or the Ritz. If it's a 4 or 5 star plan, it still can have very high denial rates, high mortality rates, high delay rates. So you are taking a gamble in Medicare Advantage. Many people love it, and I will say that. They're very satisfied, but most people are relatively healthy. And if you're relatively healthy, yes, any insurance is great, but you don't really need insurance when you're healthy. You need insurance when you get sick. And the question is always going to be, am I going to be able to get the care I need when I get sick? And the answer is always going to be in traditional Medicare, almost all of the time, you're going to find that you can get the care you need from the doctors you want to see. And it's going to get covered without delays. It's going to be deemed medically necessary if your treating physician says you need it. In Medicare Advantage, you should not be surprised if you have to go through lots of hoop to get care that you need urgently, and that the delays can actually be very harmful to your health. And there is just no avoiding that, sadly.
Thanks, Diane. And I didn't realize how much I was going to need health insurance until I got sick. And that's when you need it most and when you are least able to deal with jumping through all these hoops or having to switch plans. So take the time now during open enrollment to look through your options and choose the best option for you.
which you can't really do though, unless you go into traditional Medicare. But if you're in Medicare Advantage, one more point I want to make, which was has been made recently quite a bit, which is that if you choose a Medicare Advantage plan because your doctors are in the network, so you know you'll get coverage from those doctors or your hospital is in the network, don't assume that because their names are in the provider directory, that they're really in the network. Double check. Because those directories can often be wrong. Moreover, unfortunately, doctors and hospitals leave Medicare Advantage networks all the time. So even if they are in the network beginning in January, in March, they might not be. So you can't count on continuity of care, unfortunately.
Thank you, Diane. And this isn't the Medicare isn't the only one doing open enrollment right now. Right now, open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act is going on. And to talk about that, I'm introducing a new person to the Care Talk family. Welcome to Louise Norris from healthinsurance.org. So tell us, what is open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act? How long do people have to get covered? And what do they need to do? And who's eligible?
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me, Laura. It's a pleasure to be here. So for Affordable Care Act plans, when we talk about that, we're referring to plans that people purchase in the individual market, which means you don't have coverage from your employer or Medicare or Medicaid, so you need to buy your own health insurance. Open enrollment for these plans started November 1st, and in most states, it goes through January 15th. But there are some states that run their own health insurance marketplace and they can set different end dates. So not always January 15th, but that is the majority of the states. If you want your coverage to start January 1st, in most states, you need to sign up by December 15th. So, you know, we do advise that you want full year coverage. So kind of think of December 15th as your deadline. All of the plans that are available are fully compliant with the Affordable Care Act. So that means they cover pre-existing conditions. Your medical history does not matter. They cover the essential health benefits. So, you know, inpatient care, outpatient care, maternity, prescription drugs, rehabilitation, all those sorts of things covered on all the plans. And most people who sign up through the health insurance marketplace, which is healthcare.gov in most states, but there are states that run their own marketplace platform. Most people who sign up for those plans qualify for financial assistance. This year, there's about 21 million people signed up for 2024 coverage, and 93% of them were getting assistance with their premiums. So it does depend on your income, whether or not you're eligible for assistance with your premiums, but most people are. And Alex was talking earlier about the Inflation Reduction Act and all the improvements it made to Medicare drug pricing. It also extended some subsidy enhancements that the American Rescue Plan had made to those premium subsidies that people get in the marketplace. And so that is in place through the end of 2025. It's up in the air right now as far as going past that. 2026 and beyond, it would need more legislation. But we do have those extra subsidies, the subsidy enhancements, for sure through the end of 2025. And we have had people asking, like, with the change in administration, with the changes in Congress, what does this mean for my health insurance for 2025? And so we do just want to remind folks that, like, all the plans are set in stone, the premiums, everything like that has already been approved by state insurance regulators for 2025. So if you're signing up right now for health insurance that's going to take effect January 1st, your premiums and your benefits are not going to change in 2025. Definitely, you know, things could change in 2026, but you can sign up now and feel confident that your coverage will take effect in January. These consumer protections will still be in place. If you currently have a marketplace plan, you can, in most cases, it will automatically renew in January, but we don't ever recommend that people rely on auto renewal because there might just be new plans available in your area that you don't know about unless you comparison shop. And there can also be just changes to your plan that you might not realize are happening, and if you haven't taken a good look at the materials you got from your insurance company. So you should have received a notification from your health plan telling you how your benefits and premiums are changing in January. And then you should have also received a notice from the marketplace telling you, you know, if your subsidy amount, it will change, changes every year. So you can look at all of that and just make sure you're picking, actively choosing a plan. And it might still be the same plan you had this year. You might decide that that is still the best option. You just don't want to assume that. There are some changes. I think there's about 18 states where we saw either insurance companies leaving or joining the marketplace for 2025. So there's always some shifting going on there where new carriers come in, other carriers leave. So you might just have new plans that weren't even available in your area last year that are now available to you, or it's possible your plan is just leaving and you need to find a replacement. If you go to healthcare.gov, even if your state doesn't use healthcare.gov, they will direct you to the marketplace that your state uses. So healthcare.gov is a no wrong door. And we do have on healthinsurance.org, we have a lot of information explaining like what each different state has as far as their marketplace.
Thank you, Louise. And that is time for this week's episode, but we will come back next week and answer more of your health insurance and healthcare questions, as well as answer your questions about what changes might happen next year. As Louise mentioned, the subsidies for the Affordable Care Act, making health insurance plans more affordable, they do expire next year. And so we will talk about what that could mean for your health insurance after next year, as well as if there are attempts to modify or even repeal the Affordable Care Act in Congress. So thank you for joining us at Care Talk, and we will be back next week to talk more healthcare. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.